This show was first broadcast on Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. For more information on our lineup of shows and the role we play in the media, visit freefm.org.nz. In the programme, Historic Souvenirs. Free FM 89.0 broadcasts excerpts from the book Spitfire by B.J. Allen. Printed in wartime Britain with the publisher's note, the proofs of this book had to be passed for press subsequent to the author's departure for service overseas, 1942.
London, 1940.
But General Vagon has called the Battle of Bronze. The Battle of Britain is about to begin.
Our fighter patrols over Dunkirk beaches in the World War II evacuation does deter enemy attack. It also raises morale for trapped Allied troops.
Speedbird salutes the Fuhrer.
Several pilots are posted missing. It's a risk we all run. One RAF pilot seems to lead a charmed life. He shares his strategy of how he downs so many enemy aircraft at a range of 1,200 yards. He describes how he aims at long range his Spitfire machine guns and, facing the foe directly, joggles his joystick in a stirring motion that, in effect, directs not a continuous straight stream of tracer, but a cone of lethal fire, often inflicting damage to enemy aircraft. In our squadron's dawn patrols, we sometimes fly at an altitude with oxygen deprivation affecting our judgment, unless we breathe our supplementary oxygen supply. First light reflects the glassy-looking North Sea far below. It's reassuring to glance in the mirror to see our Spitfires arrayed in formation in the sky behind. I decide to patrol just below the cloud base, where an enemy bomber is likely to lurk. The Belgian coastal town of Nieuport is slowly passing beneath our wings. Without incident, we turn to make a 20-mile return run west to Dunkirk. Still, some small movement far below catches my attention. My eyes focus on an enemy aircraft diving towards shipping off the harbour. Coming hard round, I dive after it. Our squadron follows. In the sea, there's a terrific flash, producing a huge fountain of water flung high in the air as the disturbance subsides. We no longer see a ship. I am gripped by blind fury as the enemy dive bomber pilot flees for cloud cover. In a moment, he'll be in range of my guns. But he's gone before I can hammer home my attack. I go up through the clouds, hoping to glimpse the enemy, but no such luck. We circle, poised to attack if the German should come out of the cloud, then spot anti-aircraft fire inland. Three Dorniers just above the clouds. Easing the joystick forward, I drop my altitude to theirs to begin to stalk them. I don't think they notice till I rise from flying just above the clouds to a firing position on them from behind. They are flying in Vic formation. I fire a short burst from 400 yards out, hoping to kill a rear gunner or at least frighten them. As I gradually gain on their formation, I see a Spitfire climb out of the clouds to adopt the same tactic. Now in good range, I steady my aircraft in the slipstream of Adornia as my right thumb fingers the firing button on the stick. Spitfire checks slightly as 8 streams of tracer issue from its wings. I stop firing to correct my aim as the slipstream buffets me about. I hear a spang, look down to the wing, missing a sliver of paint that betrays how close comes a German bullet. It leaves a shining furrow before it bounces off the metal. Again I fire, but break away to one side as the Dornier seems to rush back to meet me. Involuntarily, I tense my muscles as I try to contract my body, half expecting to hear, above the engine's roar, the sound of bullets hitting my Spitfire. If he fired, the German gunner missed an easy target until I get safely out of range. When I next see the Dornier, it seems strangely unsteady, losing height, disappearing in cloud. I dive after it. Then, not a Dornier, but a Heinkel goes across in front of me. I fire. Now, so oil-smeared is the Spitfire's windscreen, visibility is vital. It's impossible to see clearly through it or use the gun sight. Later, the fault's traced to an oil leak on the propeller. When an enemy formation of Heinkels passes overhead, I try pulling back the cockpit hood, donning goggles to peer past the windscreen. A terrific blast of air all but whips off my goggles, closing on the bombers from below and to one side of them. I fire all I've left of my ammunition, although with little hope of actually hitting any of them. Their response is fleeting. They merge like ghosts into grey cloud. Meanwhile, my fuel's running low. Time to hasten to England above the long line of shipping over the English Channel.
ever in the field of human consciousness, when so much owed by so many to so few.
Recognize the steamer I boarded in happier days to cross to the continent, never dreaming it could come to this. Just as I come abreast of the steamer, I witness water erupting in its wake. I nearly jump out of the cockpit in fright. To my alarm, above is a Dornier bomber which releases four bombs from its belly. I turn sharply, begin climbing. So does the Dornier, attracting anti-aircraft fire from a cruiser about a mile from where the first bomb fell. My Spitfire hurtles downward with no weapons and its fuel diminishing. Skimming the sea, I pass by the reminders of failed missions residing in rusting wrecks of the Goodwin Sands. With no margin for error, I reach the refueling aerodrome to replenish our petrol. Relieved at last from the fear of running out of fuel while airborne, I take off over peaceful English countryside, a horizon crowded with myriads of balloons. My destination, our squadron's RAF base, on an aerodrome crowded with hangars on the outskirts of London. Today, I'm fortunate to find it directly. Put the nose down, dive above the runways to begin a climbing turn to the left round the circuit, throttling back as I do so, reaching with my left hand to release the hood catch with space for my elbow to lever it right back. Airspeed drops from 180 miles per hour as I select the undercarriage control, and white indicator pegs in the wings come slowly out until I can read the lettering stating down. A glance at the electric indicator in the cockpit tells me wheels are locked down. Now I open its radiator wide as my airspeed sinks to 160 miles per hour and throttle back. I turn at the downward side of the aerodrome. Wait for speed to reach 120 miles per hour to lever down the flaps. I feel the Spitfire slow and the nose drops. I pull the control setting pitch of the propeller on fine. Then I put the stick to the left a little and back again, so the aircraft is gliding into wind towards the aerodrome. I set the mixture up from its weak position, close the throttle more, just as a belt of trees slides beneath us. The airfield's boundary fence is looming up. A glance to see the airspeed, 95 miles per hour. Okay, I close the throttle, easing the stick back as I fly past the fence. Back a little more as the aircraft flattens out. Hold it. Then right back. Some slight jolting and a slight bump. I'm down, still rolling along the airstrip, so I'm pulling the brake lever on and off, careful to avoid slowing down so suddenly as to tip the Spitfire on its nose. As I switch off, one of the fitters jumps up on the wing to ask the inevitable question.
Any luck, sir?
Look at that windscreen, I grimace. The fitter frowns, shakes his head.
Sorry, sir. It's the air screw, I'm afraid.
One of our missing pilots has turned up, without his Spitfire,
having ditched in the sea after an enemy bullet punctures his oil tank. His misfortune is matched by a French fisherman's trying to sail his fishing boat home to Dunkirk, having volunteered his vessels to evacuate troops over to England. He's now homeward bound, but lost his bearings. Rescuing a downed pilot who can navigate resolves both men's problems. Our pilot navigates the Yoli Masko along the Belgian coast, her captain still willing to take on more rescues. But by now, the British Expeditionary Force evacuation is at its end. Our rescued pilot reports for duty. Patrols over Dunkirk are in the last throes. On June the 3rd, 1940, we take off on the last of our squadron's dawn patrols from their usual base, before we resume stationing at our home base. We rise on takeoff through low cloud to rendezvous with the other squadrons above. It's a black 95-mile trail, stretching as far as London. The whole scene rather reminds me of a theatre after the audience is gone. From above, Dunkirk looks deserted. It's a show that's now over. Like litter, there's a few Thames barges, looking like they don't belong. Like an overturned lorry on the beach, a sunken destroyer offshore. Our enemy is only 20 miles from England's shores now.
I'll never forget the people I met braving those angry skies. I remember well as the shadows fell, the light of hope in their eyes. And though I'm far away, I still can hear them say, thumbs up. For when the dawn comes up, there'll be bluebirds over the white cliffs of Dover. Tomorrow, just you wait and see. There'll be love and laughter and peace ever after tomorrow when the world is free. The shepherd will tend his sheep, the valley will bloom again, and Jimmy will go to sleep in his own little room again. There'll be bluebirds over the white cliffs of Dover. Tomorrow, just you wait and see.
on June the 5th, 1940, we're to relocate at our home station, farewelling with regret the hosting commander, whose welcome is warm and sets the tone for all ranks to be careful and kind to each other. Nothing is too much trouble for them, if it's of help to us. We lost our own commanding officer to the Germans, who hold him prisoner of war. Our squadron's contribution to the war effort so far is summed up coldly as statistics. German aircraft destroyed, 28. Probably destroyed, 9 others. Wounded, 1. Killed, 2.
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you a toast to ladies and gentlemen. May this fair land we love so well in dignity and freedom dwell. The world may change and go awry, while there is still one voice to cry. Country lane, wherever there's a cottage small beside a field of grain, there'll always be an England where there's a busy street, wherever there's a turning wheel, a million marching feet. Red, white, and blue, what does it mean to you? Surely you're proud, shout it out loud, Britain's away. The Empire, too, we can depend on you. Freedom remains, these are the chains, nothing can break. There'll always be an England, and England shall be free. If England means as much to you as England means to me. Out loud, Britain's away. The Empire, too, we can depend on you. Freedom remains, these are the chains, nothing can break. There'll always be an England, and England shall be free. If England means as much to you as England means.
Spitfire by B.J. Allen, printed in Britain by Butler and Tanner. Publisher's note. The proofs of this book had to be passed for press subsequent to the author's departure for service overseas, 1942. We invite you to join us again next week at the same time, same station, for another edition of the story which is based on the book Spitfire by B.J. Allen, a book subject to censoring that hides the identity of places and people. Nevertheless, the book Spitfire by B.J. Allen is faithful to the sequence of events. Till then, enjoy your week. Cheerio.
Episodes, use the accessmedia.nz app for iOS and Android devices, or subscribe to this podcast via Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Apple Podcasts. This free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.